Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Welcome to the Ben Shapiro Podcast. In today's episode, the discussion centers around Pope Francis and his controversial views on migration and social issues, contrasting his left-leaning perspectives with traditional Catholic teachings. This exploration delves into the media's portrayal of the Pope and the reactions from various factions within the Church. Let's begin.
Pope Francis has been vocal, speaking out against ways that the Trump administration has handled migrant issues, to also issues across Europe.
Even before he was elected in 2016, the Pope talked about this idea of building walls to keep out migrants as something that he said was unchristian, and this sort of continued over the course of his presidency.
Many on the hard right inside the church were shocked that this Pope would actually borrow from Jesus Christ and living that simple life.
And again, the reason that the left-leaning media like Pope Francis is because, again, I speak as somebody who really does not have a dog in this particular fight. It's because he was a liberation theologist. He is somebody who believed in a sort of Marxism mix up with Roman Catholicism. And what that meant is that on economic issues, on issues ranging from migration to distribution of resources to the environment, he put heavy focus on a very left wing perspective. Now, what people in the media like to ignore was the fact that Pope Francis actually was still traditional on issues ranging from same sex marriage to abortion, to transgenderism. He said many of the same things that Pope Benedict had said before Pope Benedict resigned back in 2013. That is when Pope Francis took over. But the media, of course, very celebratory of Pope Francis in a way they never were of Pope Benedict, specifically because he said things that sounded different than the papacy had in the past. According to the New York Times, which of course was celebrating Pope Francis, Francis steadily steered the church in another direction, restocking its leadership with a diverse array of bishops who shared his pastoral welcoming approach as he sought to open up the church. And this is, of course, the way that the left-leaning media treats Pope Francis, is that he opened up the church. He made it broader and more appealing to people. Now, what we are seeing in the United States, actually, in terms of the numbers, is that more young Americans are turning toward Catholicism, but it's more traditional forms, not in these sort of left-leaning forms that Catholicism seems to be taking these days, but going back to things like Latin Mass. And my friends who are Catholic, many of our staffers who are Catholic, Daily Wire is disproportionately Catholic, actually. Many of the people who work for us are people who go to traditional Latin Mass and go to more traditional Roman Catholic churches. However, according to the media, the importance of Pope Francis is that he was essentially moving the entire church to the left. According to the New York Times, many rank-and-file Catholics approved, believing the church had become inward-looking and distant from ordinary people. Now, again, do they have any polling data to support the idea that the leftward-leaning moves of the church have somehow been a salutary good for the church? They do not. It's just many people believe. Francis reached out to migrants, the poor, the destitute, the victims of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy members, and to alienated gay Catholics. He traveled to often forgotten and far-flung countries and sought to improve relations with an antagonistic Chinese government, Muslim clerics, and leaders from across the fragmented Christian world. And again, the sort of extraordinarily positive view that the media hold of any pope is dependent on that pope doing what they believe to be the bidding of the political left. This is why they were puzzled when the day before the pope passed away, Vice President J.D. Vance visited. Now, they're very happy that the pope seemed to give him a bit of a lecture on migration, but the fact that J.D. Vance, who's a fairly recent convert to Catholicism, was meeting with the pope was somewhat puzzling to them in the first place. They don't have any trouble understanding why Nancy Pelosi, an extraordinarily pro-abortion, pro-transgenderism, pro-same-sex marriage person, is a Catholic, or Joe Biden, even though they violate Catholic doctrine at every turn, but they had some sort of hang-up when it came to J.D. Vance. According to the Wall Street Journal, in his final hours, Pope Francis met Vice President J.D. Vance and delivered an Easter message on a theme that was central to his papacy, an appeal for better treatment of migrants and other vulnerable and marginalized people. In his final Easter message, read out by an aide, Francis called for an end to the conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, and Sudan, and condemned hardline immigration policies again. Now, again, it's very nice for the Pope to condemn war. Also, it would be good if, you know, maybe he took a moral stance on some of those wars, which actually do have a moral component. It turns out that the wars in Ukraine, Gaza, Sudan, these are not just conflicts that randomly break out across the planet. They actually have moral underpinnings. And you know, speaking as a critic of Pope Francis, because I believe that the Pope was not morally clear on a wide variety of conflicts and on a wide variety of issues, ranging from economics to international politics. I wish he had said more about the actual underlying morality of, say, the conflict in Gaza. And by that, I mean, it would have been nice if he had not done a nativity scene at the Vatican that posed baby Jesus as a Palestinian, for example, or if he had suggested that maybe Hamas needed to go. And in Ukraine, it would have been great if the Pope had actually said Russian aggression in Ukraine is evil and wrong. That would have been great. I would have liked more of that sort of thing from Pope. The same thing holds true with regard to economics. I wish that Pope Francis had not been so enthralled to, as the Wall Street Journal editorial board says, ideologies that keep the poor in poverty. The Pope was a radical environmentalist, and so he was constantly criticizing capitalism when the reality is that poor people across the world need more capitalism and better property rights, not the opposite. The Wall Street Journal editorial board says his papacy was marked by anti-Americanism and not merely against Donald Trump. He seems to believe Latin America is poor because the United States is rich. That, of course, is a hallmark of liberation theology, which is a left-leaning mashup, as I said, of sort of Marxist economics with Catholic social teaching. As the Wall Street Journal said, some attribute his hostility to free markets to his Latin American background. Born in Buenos Aires, Pope Francis at a young age was made the provincial superior for a Jesuit order in Argentina during the time of the military junta. This is a hard line to walk. Some in his order accused him of unfairly being too friendly with the regime. And Argentina, of course, during Pope Francis's tenure, when he was in Argentina, was run by Juan and Evita Perón. And Peronism was a Marxist brand of centralized politics.
Shifting our focus now, let's explore how Pope Francis's background influenced his approach to global politics, particularly in relation to the Chinese Communist Party.
And of course, it's also true that the Pope reached out, Pope Francis reached out to the Chinese Communist Party in unique ways. He attempted to make common cause with the Chinese Communist Party. He actually gave the Communist Party in China influence on who exactly would be the bishops in China, which is not a great way to do your religion. I mean, one of the kind of great things about the history of Catholicism is that when Catholics were sending priests all over the world to minister to people, they weren't actually changing the underlying logic of the Catholic Church. If you're making your pick for bishop subject to the Chinese Communist Party, which hates God and hates Catholicism and hates religion, that is not a great way to do it. Now, again, I'm being very critical of the Pope here because the media decided that the Pope's politics were the thing that made him who he was. You can also make the case that what made the Pope who he was his empathy. And this was sort of the other strain of coverage of the Pope's death, was the fact that Pope Francis was very clearly empathetic to the poor. They spent an awful lot of time with the poor, ministering to the poor. And that, of course, is a wonderful thing. In a world in which, however, the big issues of the day are so much in turmoil, and when moral leadership has never been more wanting, I'm hoping that the next Pope, and again, I'm speaking as an outsider because I'm not a Catholic, but the Pope is a large moral voice to a billion people. I'm hoping that the next Pope provides more moral clarity with regard to the things that matter. Because if the church is going to stand for anything, if it's going to gain adherence, then it has to maintain the sort of moral center of eternal values upon which it has been based. And I write a lot about the Catholic Church in my book, The Right Side of History, because the Catholic Church for 1,000 years was the preserver of Christendom. I mean, that's what it was until the rise of Protestantism. And even after the rise of Protestantism, it was the sort of battle between Catholicism and Protestantism that made Europe what it was. The Peace of Westphalia was based on the idea, religious toleration was based on the idea that no one was going to win the war between Catholics and Protestants. And so religious diversity should bloom within a certain framework. All of this makes a huge difference in the history of the West. And so a robust and useful Catholic Church would be a good thing. The Catholic Church has been fading in recent decades, not just because of the assault of secularism, but because, like pretty much every mainline religion, it has been imbibing from the well of modernity and casting out its own spiritual values. And that is not going to have long-term good impact on faith, on those eternal values themselves. We'll get to more on this in just one moment. First, you know what I hate? Big government, right? You know what else I hate? Being overcharged. There's just a few things that I hate. It's like the reverse of The Sound of Music. Pure Talk, the cell phone company I use for business every day, is helping you save money on your cell phone bill. That is correct. Pure Talk says, I don't think so, to $100 a month cell phone plans. That's just wasteful. It's irresponsible. Instead, they're offering America's most dependable 5G network and America's most sensible prices. Listen to this. Unlimited talk, text, 15 gigs of data plus mobile hotspot for just $35 a month. The best part, right now you get a free one-year membership to The Daily Wire Plus, which is a lot of great stuff. It's uncensored, ad-free daily shows, the free leftist tears, like the whole deal. And with Pure Talk's U.S. customer service team, you can switch hassle-free in as little as 10 minutes. Go to puretalk.com/Shapiro. Switch on over to Pure Talk at puretalk.com/Shapiro. Get a year of Daily Wire Plus for free with qualifying plan. Pure Talk is wireless by Americans for Americans. Their coverage is excellent. I use them all the time. Obviously, you should too. Go check them out right now. PureTalk.com/Shapiro. Get a year of Daily Wire Plus for free with qualifying plan. Also, if you're a homeowner, you should listen to this. Did you know somebody can literally steal your house? This is real and it does happen. A scammer can forge your signature in one document, use a fake notary stamp, and spend about $40 to file that at the county recorder's office. Then they take out loans by using your home as collateral, which unlocks all the value in your home. You won't even know that that's happening until you start getting collection and foreclosure notices in the mail. Most people don't check on their home title once escrow closes. That's why it's critical to find out right now if you're already a victim by heading on over to HomeTitleLock.com. They'll give you a free title history report, provide you with $1 million triple lock protection to help keep your home and equity safe. That is one of the reasons I recommend Home Title Lock. Many people, including our senior video editor, Adam, trust Home Title Lock to protect their assets. If you want a feeling of safety and security about this particular issue, Home Title Lock makes it happen for you the same way it does for Adam. You get 24/7 monitoring of your title, urgent alerts if there are any changes, and if fraud does happen, their U.S.-based restoration team will spend up to $1 million to fix the fraud and restore your title. When you go to HomeTitleLock.com, go there right now, use promo code Shapiro, you get free 14-day trial and title history report. Find out if you're already a victim. That's HomeTitleLock.com, promo code Shapiro. Now, what comes next? Well, the conclave comes next. The conclave, of course, has been made famous in literature and film. Essentially, the College of Cardinals gets together and then they vote on who ought to be the next pope. The idea being, it's kind of a beautiful idea, that God sits in the midst of the quorum. And not an idea that is unique to Catholicism. We have that sort of analog of that in Judaism. The idea is that if you have 10 men who are praying together, then God kind of sits on that quorum. The same thing, I suppose, happens with regard to the College of Cardinals, the idea that God acts through man in history.
As we shift our focus to the potential candidates for the papacy, it's intriguing to consider how their backgrounds and beliefs might shape the future direction of the church.
Perhaps the front runner right now, at least in the mind of the media, is a man named Luis Antonio Gokim Tagle, who is from Manila. He is 67. He's considered closely aligned with Francis. He has criticized the harsh and severe rhetoric Catholic clerics use to describe members of the LGBTQ plus community, divorced people and unwed mothers. He was born in Manila. His mom is of Chinese heritage. His father is Tagalog from Philippines. So again, he was proclaimed a cardinal by Benedict, but the idea here is that he would continue the sort of left-leaning march of the Vatican. And then you have some nominees who are more conservative. So for example, Peter Erdo from Budapest. He is the Metropolitan Archbishop of Esztergom, Budapest in Hungary. He's one of the more conservative members of the College of Cardinals. So when Pope Francis declared in December 2023 that Catholic priests could bless but not marry same-sex couples, Erdo appeared to oppose the decision in his Christmas Eve sermon. He has opposed allowing divorced and remarried Catholics to receive communion as well. So he's sort of more traditionalist. So it'll be fascinating to see who emerges as the next pope. And of course, the whole world does have a stake in that because the pope is the spiritual leader for a billion people. Our condolences go out, obviously, to all Catholics today, because whether you agree with Pope Francis or not, when the pope passes away, that means an enormous amount to our Catholic friends and neighbors. And may his memory and his work be a blessing to them. Meanwhile, when it comes to the United States, the economy continues to roil and tumble. Yesterday, the stock market had a pretty terrible day. It was down about 1,000 points in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Gold was up. Bond yields were up, meaning people are moving away from bonds. They're moving toward gold. They're moving away from stocks. All of this demonstrating lack of faith in the underlying health of the American economy. De-dollarization is happening. People are moving away from the dollar in international trade. A huge amount of this is due to the tariff war, of course, that President Trump declared. Since that tariff war was declared, the stock market is down markedly. Over the course of President Trump's presidency, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is off somewhere between 13 and 15 points. In something like 11 days in modern history in which the Dow Jones Industrial Average has dumped 1,000 points, four of those have come since President Trump declared his tariff war. Now, as I've said many times, when it comes to tariffs, there are some things that tariffs are good for. So if you want to actually punish a country, say like China, then a tariff is a useful thing if well calibrated. If you want to protect an industry that is crucial to national security, then tariffs are useful. And you might use it to protect, say, your shipbuilding or your steel industry if you feel that's crucial.
As we shift our focus, let's delve deeper into the implications of these tariffs and their broader impact on the economy.
And we can have arguments about each of those industries, but that would be the purpose of a tariff. Or you could put a tariff on a country because you're attempting to get that country to lower its own tariffs, to escalate to de-escalate. However, launching a trade war on the entire world all at once turns out not to be something that helps the American economy. It is not a well thought out policy, and you are seeing that in the markets nearly every day. According to the Wall Street Journal, stocks fell, with the Dow Industrials dropping almost 1,000 points and on pace for their worst April since 1932. By the way, for no reason. Again, not for good reason. The underlying health of the Trump economy was good. The attempt to declare a trade war, if you're going to do so and you're going to orient against China, as I've laid out, there are smart ways to do it. You have to first do the preconditional work in order to do a successful tariff war on China. You can't just launch the tariffs up to 245% and hope everything's going to work out okay. Because it turns out you then have to blow holes through the middle of your tariff on things like auto parts or pharmaceuticals or for Apple, which is what President Trump has already done. If you actually want to fight a successful tariff war with China, a few things have to be done before you even start the tariff war with China. First, you need to sign terrific free trade deals with everybody else in the world in order to orient them toward you and away from China. Two, you actually have to gradually raise the tariffs so as to allow people time to reshore their key industries away from China to Vietnam or to Indonesia or to Malaysia or wherever else they're going to reshore. Three, if you have really crucial industries, you have to take the time and cut the regulations such that those crucial industries have already reshored in the United States before the supply gets cut off from China. Four, you actually have to have rare earth minerals, right? All the things you need from China need to be sourced elsewhere. So when you cut off China, you're not cutting off your nose to spite your face. And five, you actually have to build up your military sufficient that if China feels boxed in and they go for Taiwan, you can deter them. You can do all that work before you actually launch a well-calibrated trade war with China. Virtually none of that work was done. It was just sort of dumped out on the table that we were going to do a giant trade war. And then everything else was backfilled. And the markets are reacting to that. If they thought that this was well thought out, the markets, if people in the investment game thought that all of this was well calibrated and well thought out, you wouldn't see the markets moving up and down wildly. The volatility is the indicator. I mean, overall, you're seeing a decline, but you're also seeing volatility. On a day-to-day level, people don't know what's going on. One of the reasons that the market dumped yesterday is because President Trump decided that it would be a wonderful idea to attack Jerome Powell again. He put out a series of truths in which he slammed Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, slammed him again. And then he went on a sort of truth spree talking about how people don't understand tariffs. Quote, the businessmen who criticize tariffs are bad at business, but really bad at politics. They don't understand or realize that I am the greatest friend that American capitalism has ever had. Well, listen, I think that he's a friend to American capitalism, but you know what the markets react to? The policy. They don't react to just the perception of who they believe the president is. They react to the policy. And right now, again, it is unclear whether President Trump is ratcheting up tariffs to ratchet them down, whether he's just attempting to protect key industries, or whether he thinks trade is bad, like his advisor, Peter Navarro, who is, in fact, not good at this. Again, if you want the markets to rise again, what you actually need to do, Mr. President, is fire Peter Navarro, who is quite bad at this, and let your Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, negotiate a bunch of great trade deals. That is the best way out of this situation.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website, www.podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.